story in USA Today. One-third of the 1,600 former soldiers who've been ordered back into service are basically just not showing up. And some of them have requested... I don't think you can do that. I mean, I think you're like AWOL if you do that. Some of them have requested medical exemptions, which they're apparently unlikely to get. And then others of them say that they have to work on a very important political campaign in Alabama. Anyway, good things to talk about. Yes, what? Yes?
No, I mean, that's where that whole Bush thing does.
It's a bad example. So yeah. Stop. You don't really have, turns out you don't really have to do your military service.
Right.
If you're too busy. We've got, in the world of entertainment, we have, my whole thought is, something that's going to happen in 2009, I mean, as Dick Cheney and Ted Kennedy have both pointed out, the world may be gone in 2009. So what's the point of saying that Jay Leno is going to retire and that Conan O'Brien is going to get the job?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. Why not just, well, I guess they probably had to do that to keep Conan happy.
Yes, it was really
so he wouldn't bail and go somewhere else?
Yeah.
That has a familiar ring to it now, doesn't it?
Yes, indeed. And, well, the thing is, I've read several accounts of this, and then I read Slate has this terrific TV writer now who does this thing called Surfing or something like that, something about channel surfing, and she had a very different take on it. She said, in the midst of this sort of love fest about the 50th anniversary of The Tonight Show, Leno made this announcement that he'll be replaced in 2009 by Conan O'Brien. And she claimed that Leno, I didn't see this, she claimed that Leno sounded strangely resentful, even passive-aggressive. In less than 2 minutes, she writes, Leno managed to place the blame on NBC for subtly edging him out of his job.
They came to me and said, we don't want to lose Conan O'Brien. I said, oh, okay, what does that mean?
And for ruining his reputation with his relationship with David Letterman back in 1992. Quite frankly, good friendships were permanently damaged. At the end of his speech, he went so far as to compare the passing on of the Tonight Show post to a dynastic succession.
You hold it, and you hand it off to the next person. Did you hear that? Did you know about that? Were you aware of that? Did you hear about this?
My Jay Leno impersonation is not very good.
Well, actually, it's not that bad.
But, so anyway, I've never known
anybody to do a Jay Leno impersonation, actually.
Did you know that? Did you hear about that? Were you aware of that?
It's pretty good.
Yeah. And then, the other thing is, I do occasionally, I'm not sleeping well recently, so maybe I should have lots of occasions to watch the Conan O'Brien show. But when I do, I'm impressed by the innovation of it, and it's very transgressive and, funny in a way that I enjoy funny. Like, I don't happen to find Jay Leno particularly funny. I think he seems like a pretty nice guy. His heart's in the right place.
Did you find Carson funny?
I found him okay funny. Well, I was younger then. I wasn't, the thing about The Tonight Show basically is that it exists to sell mainstream culture, and it exists to endorse whatever the mainstream culture's idea of funny or talented is. Whereas what goes on later at night, like Conan O'Brien or the early David Letterman, tends to be exactly the opposite. It tends to be, at least in some kind of marginal way, an attack on mainstream culture. I mean, for example, on the same night that this announcement was going to be made that he was going to be taking over The Tonight Show, I think Conan O'Brien was, let me see, I think I actually have this here. Conan O'Brien, they had a rerun of Conan O'Brien, and he was talking about the recent NBC Universal merger, and he had a segment called Let's Look at the Far-Reaching Implications of the NBC Universal Merger. And then he cited downsizing concerns, and he asked the audience to choose a Universal Pictures character to throw in the late night wood chipper. Apparently they actually have a real wood chipper there on the set. So the audience picked E.T. So this kind of wooden version of E.T. wound up in shreds on the studio floor with one severed finger still glowing. Well, that's the kind of thing you do on late night television. It's very funny. I mean, I think that's very funny. But really, on the Tonight Show, you can't be throwing beloved film icons into wood chippers.
No, probably not.
How can you? So basically, what they're saying is that in 2009, they will ruin Conan O'Brien. And meanwhile, Jay Leno apparently was planning to do the show into his 80s. And that's
so this is nothing more really than what Letterman did.
Kind of.
Same thing, mm-hmm. Basically.
Yeah, maybe Jay will turn up over on some other network now. I don't know.
Didn't he say that he wanted, he'll be what, 59 when this happens, and he's basically just wanted to spend more time with his wife?
That's what they all said.
Where we heard that before. Yeah. And I guess he made her a promise or something that he would spend more time or something.
That when they canceled my show here, they announced that I wanted to spend more time with Arnold Dean's family.
Yeah.
They also announced that you're planning to spend time with some family anyway.
Right.
They really mean that.
The Manson family.
It's really true, yeah. So anyway, we've got some calls coming in here about, let's say, fairly random topics. 522-WTIC, 1-800-968-WTIC, star WTIC. Now's a good time to call in, because I believe coming up we do have a pass full of guests. So if that's something you need to say, now's the time to do it.
Okay, I don't even know where to begin here. Let's go with Tom in the car. Tom?
Hi, Tom. Turn down your radio. Pay attention. Eat your Wheaties. Button up your overcoat. No, he sounded like a promising caller, but he's not there. So
all right.
That's a problem.
Charles and Vernon, hi.
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 Hey, guys. Even though you didn't answer my last question when I called the other time, I didn't let that deter me. I don't hold that against you. Okay, here's a question I have today concerning the debates coming up.
Yeah.
If I was the moderator...
Yeah,
I'd bring two sheets of paper and two pens with me,
mm-hmm.
and at a certain point in the debate, so-called debate, I'd hand out a paper to each of the candidates with mm-hmm. a ballpoint pen, and I'd ask them the question, is there anything you want to tell us about the secret society that you belong to?
Skull and Bones?
And I'd tell them you've got, like 2 minutes mm-hmm. to write down whatever you want to write.
You know what they should do? I think you're on the right track. Right now, well, I'll let you finish, but while I have this thought.
They write down what they want in the 2 minutes, then I'd have them, some independent source collect the papers and read them. The reason why it would be important for them to write them down is so one couldn't play off the other.
Yeah. Now, were you going to call up about, like, electric meters or something?
Yes,
what did you call up about? What was it?
Yeah, there was electric meters in Baghdad.
What about them?
Well, the reason why I wanted to know was because...
What did you want to know?
The reason why I wanted to know if they have them is because... They're not going to get reliable electricity until they have metered.
Yeah. So I was supposed to find that out, right?
Well, yeah.
And I didn't do it, did I?
Well, it's not your fault. It's a difficult task, I guess.
No, I would have done it if I felt like it.
Yeah.
As far as that goes, what I think is a better idea, though. I think you're on the right track. I think that they should do a final Jeopardy question at the end of the debate.
Yeah, they
should write down how many electoral votes they're willing to wager.
Colin, you turn when I actually do seriously. This is actually a serious call,
mm-hmm.
and you do tend to make it into a hilarious call.
Yeah, well,
yeah, that's your prerogative.
That's I don't really care that much about Skull and Bones. I went to Yale. It's a bunch of twits. It doesn't make any difference. It's not important. But I like the idea anyway of a final Jeopardy kind of thing. And so, like Kerry would say, okay, I'm going to wager Iowa. And Wisconsin, that's like 18 electoral votes or something right there. And Bush will say, I'm going to wager Florida. Because he can ring down anyway. It's an interesting idea, and we'll just move ahead.
It's the final week of baseball's regular season, where the Red Sox are fine-tuning for what lies ahead.
All right, so we have many things to talk about. We've mentioned a few of them. The New York Times has a big story about the fact that the FBI has a backlog of 123,000 hours of untranslated recordings potentially connected to terror-related investigations.
Yeah.
123,000, which is 20% of the total of such material. And apparently the problem, once again, is that they don't have enough translators. They have this huge backlog. Which is, of course, bad news for the country. It's very good news for Dickie Robinson's Connecticut School of Arabic. So those of you who are looking for a job that could put you in the FBI in 6 months, you might want to call Dickie's...
Learn from pros.
Yeah.
Learn from the pros.
Learn from actual Arabic.
Yeah.
Dickie Robinson's Connecticut School of Arabic. Give them a call today. The FBI is looking for people like you. I mean, they're looking for people like you in several senses, actually, but... including the one that you might actually like. And then we may have to use the power, the 50,000-watt flamethrower.
I
find Bobby Sherwood a girlfriend. Or a dating, or something.
Why would
he's
you...
driving us out of our mind.
Why would you say
he's
that?
He's had a lot of...
Because he's driving...
He has pent-up libidinal energy, and he's
Well, that's pretty good, because I
fighting with Mikey C, and he's bothering us about stuff.
I wondered how you're going to clean that up.
He's gone from being a fairly amiable person. He's just, there's a sharp edge to him right now.
I know.
I think it's,
I'm sure I have had a brutal week. I will side with the Mad McNamara on that.
It is pent up libidinal energy.
Uh-huh.
So we don't even have to find him a girlfriend. We just have to find someone to have sex with.
Oh, you know.
Hey.
Well, no, that's true. And our lives will instantly get better. Now, he's an attractive young man in his 20s, non-smoker. He talks a lot, but I mean, assume the woman in question could chloroform him or something at some point. There must be something they know how to
do.
He doesn't have any other bad habits besides that. He's a personable person.
Well,
why would this be difficult?
I don't have any idea.
Okay.
I didn't know that it would be difficult.
Well, it's not. Now that we've got the ball rolling, as it were.
Yeah.
Well, you don't seem like you're going to be any help at all.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we have to take a little break right now. Don't we?
I think so.
Yeah. Outstanding. The country in chaos. I mean, having George Bush as president for four more years would plunge the country into chaos, but also going through a tied electoral thing.
And then to go for 4 years.
Two different forms of chaos, but so it just protracts the chaos. Bad chaos.
Yeah. It would seem like chaos for the short term.
Yeah.
I mean, comparatively speaking,
yeah,
it wouldn't seem like much after a while.
No. You'd wish for the old chaos, actually.
Yeah.
So anyway, we have time to take your phone calls right now. Juan Williams coming up in the next half hour. 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. A couple of things in the paper today. Well, you pointed out this thing about WFSB that is part of the deal they got. They got the so-called Parcel 12B, which is where Main Street and Trumbull Street intersect, then they're going to build a lavish new headquarters known as the Terzi Dome on that site. And, the roof actually approximates the curve of Altair.
Right.
So they're Frank Gehry.
The retractable.
Yeah, Frank Gehry is working on a retractable air design.
Receding dome.
Yeah, where they can actually replace that with the next anchor, too. They could just, have a crane take the hair off, and they hire like Bill Curtis, they'll put his hair on top. So they got that thing, and then eventually when they build that thing, then they give the city the what they own of Constitution Plaza, where Broadcast House is, it is known, or International House of Broadcast, I guess is especially actual name. And so they give the city that and Kara Sundlin,
there's a draft choice involved somewhere.
Yeah, I think they get Elizabeth Horton Schaff, but not until 2008 or something like that. It's complicated. She has to play out an option.
Right.
But then somewhere in there, now you're the expert on this. They have to,
well, it's just what I've read.
They
have to buy advertising on Channel 3 to the tune of, I guess, about $25,000 a year. Which doesn't seem like a lot of money if you're buying television advertising, because it's, TV advertising is usually fairly expensive.
Right.
But apparently, the $25,000 is also half of the city's advertising budget for the entire year.
But they also say they don't know what
to advertise.
It's Lee Erdman or somebody like that saying, we don't really know what we would be advertising on television.
Yeah.
We did agree to do this to sort of keep FSB from going to Rocky Hill.
Yeah.
I think we could probably come up with some ideas for them anyway.
Oh, I think we could. Absolutely.
I think Oz Griebel's railroad salvage is a possible idea. Oz would come on, once a week for 30 seconds. And
the railroad hat?
Yeah, mentioned a railroad hat. And
maybe a lantern.
His wife, Choo Choo, would be with him. And Choo Choo Griebel. and he would just discuss, some water damage things that he had and stuff like that.
Overstock. Is it necessary to mention the words water damage to me? Thank you.
I'm sorry about that. I wasn't thinking. But anyway, so that would be a thought.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
Yeah.
It's a great way to get the ball rolling.
Yeah. I think hiring Clyde Vaughn as a city spokesman, that's a bad idea, all right? I don't think he should be in any of the ads. no matter what they're for. Come see Hartford.
Would the ads then go for $10 a piece?
Or maybe some kind of discount rate they've negotiated. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, this
This week on 60 Minutes, Dale Earnhardt Jr. tells the world that he believes an invisible force held him underneath his arms and pulled him out of a burning car at Sears Point or Ridgeway in Sonoma. He thinks it was John Kerry, but he's not sure. It's time for Sports à Trois, the very French sports discussion segment. Avec Monsieur Ambrosio.
Oui.
Monsieur Stevens and myself, we just run to the mayor.
Were you working overtime on that one? That's one of your better ones.
Well, thank you.
That's one of the good ones. What's next on 60 Minutes? What a night. Is he going to lose his job? Brutal. Pretty brutal.
All right. We're ready for the Mr. Ambrosio
yes,
question.
We are. I'm not used to doing this on Tuesday, but then again, I'm not used to doing it at all recently. So.
All right. Well, the good news is that I've lost the question, but I know how it goes anyways. Right. Dear Mr. Ambrosio,
yep.
Is it true that deep sea divers are more likely to father daughters than sons? And if so, why would that be?
Because the chromosomes change that deep under the water.
Yeah. So that is true. That
oh, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, it's been clinically proven 64% of deep sea divers' children are girls, 36% are boys. And it's interesting, too, they're more likely to father twins and triplets, multiple children, than people who do not, dive deep.
Yeah.
We couldn't really come up with any...
Is it the pressure on their reproductive organs?
We've done a lot of studies at the Institute. In fact, we've had people who have been willing to dive deep to try to find out.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't come to much of a... much of a study on this, and we're going to continue to do it. Let me just tell you, the head football coach is trying to concentrate on watching game films. He has no idea what you asked me, and he's probably sitting here thinking, I have to work with this nutcase 11 times a year? It's just unbelievable.
Explain it to him. He'll understand.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. He's got more things to worry about than ask Mr. Ambrosio.
But, there's sort of this idea that plants like being talked to.
Yes.
Plants grow better if you talk to them. If you're like cursing them out, if you're going like totally,
what?
Very Francona on them and yelling at them, and they don't like that.
That's really good for plants.
What?
A liquefied sheetrock.
Yeah.
Coming down, and just landing on them.
Well, you would be the person who studied that, but they like being talked to, they like music and stuff like that. Well, meanwhile, there's a piano-playing microbiologist. In Madrid named Aurora Sanchez Sousa. And Aurora Sanchez Sousa has developed a form of music where she turns the DNA code of various things into music. All right? So she's just using snippets of the genetic code and translating that into musical tones somehow.
How do you do that?
Create music out of DNA.
That sounds great, but how do you do it?
Well, it's not important. Just forget about that part.
in other words, you don't know.
I don't know.
Okay.
But I also know it's not important. Anyway, now what they're trying to do is they're taking that DNA, they're making music out of the DNA of yeast, and then they're playing that music back to the yeast to see if the yeast likes that music that's based on its own DNA. And in particular, they're doing this with yeast that's used to age sherry, because... yeast cells float to the top of the wine cask and cushion the wine, the sherry, against the damaging effects of air.
Yeah.
And apparently when the yeast cells are, when they listen to music that's based on their own DNA, they're even happier and they get more organized up at the top.
More organized.
Yeah, they're much more organized. They're not just sort of scattered around, wandering around at the top of the wine cask, wondering what to do.
Perhaps you should be playing some of the stuff around your desk.
we may try to find some way to, I don't know if dust bunnies and stuff really has DNA, but if it does, we could actually mites on my desk, which eat small bits of human flesh and stuff like that. They probably have a lot of DNA.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But we could do something along those lines.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah,
but you don't know how they do that, how they transform the.
Well, if you insist.
Well, no, I was just curious because it does sound very interesting.
They arbitrarily assign tones from the do re mi scale to four key building blocks of DNA's double helix.
Okay, see, that's all you had to say in the first place.
It's four nucleotides, which are the four bases: adenine, guanine, thymine, and cytosine.
Ah, okay.
They assign tones to those things.
Now we're getting.
And they play the tones back to the yeast.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
Here's your DNA. How do you like it?
Love it.
Yeah, they're just a little interesting thing.
I think it's very interesting.
It's a little sort of part of. As David Attenborough used to say, the living plant. Now the yeast gather at the top of the wine cask to listen to the music that's based on their own DNA. And they seem to enjoy it. All part of the living tide pool, which we call our plant. I used to do a great David Attenborough, but there's no market for it anymore. Nobody even knows who David Attenborough is anymore.
I do. Yeah.
anyway, we do have we'll have a little bit of time after our next break to take your phone calls, assuming you have something interesting to say to us. Otherwise, we'll probably just prattle on self-referentially as we have, or bring up your science topics that you really don't care anything about.
Call from Locutus, maybe.
Call from Locutus. We'll end the show as we so often do. Want to mention once again that tomorrow, Linda Bloodworth-Thomason, Sandy Duncan, and the woman who came to my apartment and poked around at my bedding.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.